Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1232, we reach into the Life Rattle archive to bring you two stories written and read by Robert Osborne. The stories on tonight's show are sort of a preview of an upcoming collection that will be available before the new year. Rub Salt, showcasing the writing of Robert Charles Osborne, Peaches D. Ledwidge, Elizabeth Clark, and Hente Chu, will offer some of the best writing the Life Rattle program has had the honor of broadcasting. Tonight's featured stories were first introduced on program 334 and 383 by Arnie Ackman. When I turned to Arnie's scripts for those early programs, I read that Arnie was mesmerized by Robert's reading of his story, The Fish. I was just as mesmerized by Arnie's introduction to Bob Osborne and his stories. So for tonight, I'm going to step back a few years and simply read from the scripts Arnie prepared. He is one tough act to follow, so I'm not even going to try. I will begin with the script for Life Rattle Program number 334, from August the 7th, 1994. Bob Osborne was born in Toronto in 1949, the second eldest of four children. The family grew up in Port Credit, Ontario. Osborne left school after his first year of high school in Port Credit and got a job loading bolts for drill presses in a jewelry factory. He worked there for a year before leaving Port Credit for Toronto. In Toronto, Osborne lived a wild and unpredictable life for a number of years. He told me he went through a series of jobs and drank. He waited tables and drank. He ran the kitchen at Yuk Yuk's when they first moved to Yorkville and drank. And he drank his way through a middle management position at a large ticket agency. Bob Osborne left the stress and drugs of his middle management job and became a bicycle courier for the next 7 years. He did this at the age of 35, and speaking as someone in their 40s who rides a bicycle 10 months of the year and who looks at bike couriers as secret heroes, I wish I could ride like that. I found Osborne's job change inspiring. However, the 80s slid into the 90s and the recession. Courier costs became easy targets for budget slashing. In-house courier systems and fax machines made the bike courier's survival more insecure. Osborne saw an ad and an article for the Transitional Year Program at the University of Toronto, an access program where Guy Allen, the co-host of Life Rattle, works. Osborne signed up and went for the 93-94 year. He is returning to the University of Toronto in the General Arts program this fall after he finishes his current assignment as Industry Box Office Manager for the Toronto International Film Festival. I sat mesmerized when I saw Bob Osborne read this story this past April and have been on his trail since to get his story on Life Rattle. At the reading in April, Osborne said he was reading the 18th draft of his story. When we recorded last week, Osborne told me the story had reached the 20th draft. I'm not sure at what event Arnie saw Bob Osborne read this story, and unfortunately there is no other clue, so that will remain a mystery. I'm only glad we still have this recording to play for you tonight. So let's listen now as Bob Osborne reads his story, The Fish, on Life Rattle.
The Fish by Bob Osborne. My grandmother died in November of 1959. When Grandma died, my mother, my father, my older brother, my two younger sisters and I lived in a three-room house near the mouth of the Credit River. 2 days after Grandma's funeral, we were forced to move. A man in a white uniform nailed a sign to the outside of the house. near the front door. Big black letters on white paper read, "Condemned," and underneath in smaller letters, "By the Village of Port Credit," followed by some numbers. Mum told me the numbers meant we had to move by the end of the month. We had no money to rent another house, so my Aunt Lola told Mum that we could stay in Grandma's house until she sold it. Grandma's house had 5 rooms. It didn't have a furnace, but neither did our old house. Our old house had a wood stove in the kitchen. Grandma's had 2 stoves, both coal, one in the kitchen, one in the living room. On cold nights, even with 2 stoves, my clothes, wet from snow, froze to the bedroom floor. Mum worked nights. At 5 o'clock, she changed from her civvies into her starched white uniform, made dinner for us, then walked to work up John Street. Mum waited tables at the West Side Dairy Bar. Dad drank nights. He hoisted Molson X down John Street at the Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 82. Jack, my older brother, usually babysat nights, but it was Friday, and on Friday nights, Jack worked as a pin setter at the Lakeshore Bowling Lanes. That Friday night, I babysat. I was 10. My little sisters, Kathy and Linda, played Sorry at Grandma's kitchen table. I listened to them laugh, heard the dice at the table and the tapping of their plastic pawn-shaped men as they moved them around the board. I watched TV from the living room floor. At about 8 o'clock, Dad's 55 Studebaker drove up on the lawn. Headlights shone through the kitchen windows. The engine stopped. 2 car doors slammed. I didn't like the sound of that second door. Linda and Kathy abandoned their Sorry game, ran into the living room, and sat on the floor beside me. When Dad was drunk, I could usually manage him, but a friend in tow meant trouble. In Dad staggered, followed by Nappy Pickard, a man Dad knew from the fishing boats. "I'm home, kids." Linda and Kathy looked at me. I put my finger to my mouth and shook my head. "Come here, kids." I looked at my sisters and shook my head again. "Get your arses out here and say hello to Nap." Out our arses came. Dad and Nappy sat at the kitchen table, my sister's half-finished Sorry game, now covered with a case of beer. "Hello, Mr. Pickard," I said aloud. "You lousy drunk," I whispered to my sisters. Linda and Kathy laughed. Dad and Nappy didn't notice. Nappy looked over at us and mumbled, "How are you? Where is your beautiful ma?" I smiled and nodded. After a few smacks in the face, I learned to smile and nod when a drunk asked a question. "Don't stand there like a goddamn mute. Answer, Nap." "Working, where do you think?" "Shut your smart yap and go land somewhere." We withdrew to the living room and the TV. Through the noise from the television, my sisters and I listened to Dad and Nappy as their talk turned to argument. Loud got louder, lots of "you cheap son of a bitch," and "fuck yourself," and one of my dad's favorites, "go rub salt." The argument lasted until about 10:30, until the beer ran out, until Nappy left. Dad shouted insults at Nappy out the door and down the street. He went on hollering after he shut the front door. "Yeah, worthless assholes. Get your no good ugly mugs out of that TV and clean up this kitchen." Linda and Kathy looked at each other. I stood up. Dad pitched his way from the kitchen to the living room, shouting an insult with each shaky step. Then leaned against the door jamb. "Bob, you stupid bastard. What are you, deaf? You worthless lump of shit. In that kitchen and clean up. Stupid." My new fish tank, actually a bowl containing 3 goldfish, sat on the end table in the corner of the living room. I loved that fish bowl. Dad stumbled over to my fish and upended the bowl. Water splashed on the living room floor. I watched my fish gasp on the rose pattern linoleum. I cried. "Shut up, you sucky little bastard. Want your mummy sucky?" I took a run at him. My shoulders connected with his thigh and knocked him sideways. He slipped and fell on the wet linoleum. Still crying, I knelt and tried to save my fish. He slipped several times as he tried to get up. Finally, he found his footing and staggered towards me. I stood and faced him. I'm gonna fucking kill you. He came at me. Linda and Kathy ran to get Mum from work. Dad swung. I dodged his fist. He lost his balance and fell again. As he got up, he stepped on one of my fish. I watched, horrified. He noted my reaction. Then, with intent, he lifted his foot and brought it down on another fish. I watched his black boot grind my fish into the linoleum. I grabbed an ashtray and threw it at him. I aimed wild. The ashtray hit the Chesterfield and bounced onto the floor. He came at me again. I sidestepped. He tumbled past me, and as I turned to face him, the fishbowl flew towards my head. I ducked. The bowl shattered against the wall. Ricocheting glass hit the back of my neck. The noise stunned him long enough for me to run into the bathroom. I slammed and locked the door. I heard the thump of his fist against the wall as he staggered down the hall. I'll kill you when I get my hands on you, sucky little bastard. Go rub salt, I yelled. His boot hit the bathroom door. I picked up the plunger and backed against the far wall. Blood trickled down the back of my neck. He slammed into the door with his shoulder, then kicked until the door started to give. Nelson, what the hell do you think you're doing? He stopped kicking. My dad feared my Mum. Get away from that door, you son of a bitch. He kicked the door one more time. I can't leave this house for a few hours without you bullying the boy. I opened the bathroom door a crack. Dad took a step toward Mum. Mum stood firm. Just try it, she said calmly. I knew he wouldn't. Mum opened the front door. Now get out. She gestured toward the front door with a swing of her head. He didn't move. I mean it, Nelson. Get out of this house. Go rub salt. I paid for this dump. You pay for your booze, and I don't slug 8 hours a night at the dairy so you can get tight and come home and beat my kids. Now I told you, Nelson, get out. Don't come back till you sober up. I ain't drunk. I only had 2 beer. I'm not going to argue, Nelson. I won't tell you again. Go rub salt, he spat as he wobbled out the door. We heard the car start. The headlights shone through the kitchen windows. Slowly the light grew brighter, then brighter still. Then, thump! The kitchen shook. He backed the car up and gunned the engine. Thwack! This time the whole house shook. The window shattered. Plaster from the kitchen wall crumbled and fell to the floor. Dad backed up the Studebaker. Mum picked up the phone. She dialed Muriel Stephenson, the switchboard operator at the Port Credit Police Department. Hello, Muriel? It's Florence Osborne speaking. Could you ask Sergeant Monroe to send someone over right away? I need some help with Nils. The cop car pulled up as the Studebaker hit the house for the fifth time. Plaster now lay in piles by the wall. Dust hung in the air and covered every flat surface in the kitchen. The glass from the shattered windows lay scattered on the linoleum. Cold, damp night air invaded the room. My sisters and I stood in the middle of the rubble and shook. Mum crouched and put her arms around us. It's okay, she said softly. Everything will be all right now. She petted us for a while, then got up to look out the glassless window. We followed. The cops had Dad up against the black Studebaker, legs spread, just like on Dragnet. I wanted them to punch him, but they just took him to the drunk tank to sleep it off. As the cop car pulled away, I remembered my fish. Mum, will my fish be okay? I don't think so, honey, but let's go have a look. The one fish that still looked like a fish lay motionless on the linoleum rose among the water and broken glass. Mum put her arm around me. Let me put the girls to bed. You wait here. I picked my dead fish up by its tail and laid it in my palm. I ran my finger over its yellow scales. Mum came back to the living room with a handkerchief. Here, sweetheart, put your fish in this and we'll bury it properly tomorrow. But what about the other two? I'll take care of them, Bobby, don't you worry. I placed my dead fish on the white handkerchief Mum held spread between her two hands. She folded the handkerchief gently over my fish. What about the mess? I'll patch the windows before I go. Mum briefly surveyed the living room. I'll clean up the rest of this mess tonight when I finish work. I held the cardboard as Mum nailed it to the window frames. Come on, Bobby, I'll put you to bed. She walked me to my bedroom, kissed me goodnight, and went back to the Westside Dairy Bar to finish her shift. The next day dawned gray and cold, December without snow. After breakfast, Mum led my sisters and me out to Grandma's garden. Linda and Kathy stood above me and watched as I tried to break the frozen earth with cold hands and a kitchen spoon. Mum stood back, holding the white handkerchief. She watched until the spoon bent against the frozen ground, then stepped close and lifted the bent spoon from my hand. Here, Kathy, hold Bobby's fish. I'll get the pickaxe. Kathy knelt beside me. We watched Mum disappear into Grandma's back shed and emerge seconds later with a pickaxe over her shoulder. She set the tip of the pickaxe in the small dent I had made in the ground. Move back, kids. Mum swung, then grunted as the pickaxe connected with the hard ground. Her body shook. Chunks of frozen dirt flew into the cold air. She lifted the pickaxe and brought it down with another grunt. Mum made a hole in the earth. I placed my fish in the hole. Linda pushed chunks of dark frozen earth over the white handkerchief. We paused a moment in silence. Come on inside now, kids. I'll make some hot chocolate. We stood up. Mum handed me the pickaxe. Here, Bobby, put this back for me. I dragged the pickaxe back to Grandma's shed, then joined my sisters and my mum. Mum talked of Christmas as we walked back to Grandma's house.
That was Bob Osborne reading his story, The Fish. Arnie concluded program number 334 with, Bob Osborne has more stories, and when he gets his word processor back from the repair shop, he'll be able to work on them, and hopefully get them on future Life Rattle shows. That concludes Life Rattle number 334. A short show tonight, but rich in content and strong scenes simply and beautifully rendered. Tonight, though, we will not conclude the program here. Instead, we bring you a second story written by Robert Charles Osborne, presented by Arnie Ackman on Life Rattle program number 383 in July of 1995. Arnie described Across the Street as a kind of companion story to The Fish. Both stories tell about growing up poor and the menace of alcoholism, but both stories also tell about strength and grace in the middle of the hardship. Let's listen now as Bob Osborne reads his story, Across the Street, on Life Rattle.
Across the Street, Bob Osborne. Elmer Leach's fist connected with the face of one of his sons, out in their lawn in the afternoon sun. Jack fell to his knees. Elmer lifted him by the throat. I ran into my house to get my mother. Elmer Leach is beating on Jack again, I yelled as I pulled open the screen door. Mum put down her dish towel, and I followed her outside. The Leaches lived across the street from us, on the riverside of Front Street. Mum hurried across the street without looking both ways, and stopped at Leach's fence. Elmer held his son by the throat with his left hand and hit him across the face with the back of his right. Jack's face showed nothing, no tears. He stared past his father, eyes unfocused. Elmer, you son of a bitch, leave that boy alone. Elmer turned and looked at my mum. He held up a hand, palm facing my mother. This ain't none of your business, Florence. Well, I'm making it my business. Let the boy go. Mum's shaking hands betrayed her firm, calm voice. Poor credit in 1955. 1,700 people spread out in a small strip that straddled the Credit River as it emptied into Lake Ontario. The railroad tracks cut a straight northern border, and 500 yards to the south, Lake Ontario lapped at the town's curved southern rim. The river divided Port Credit into two sides. Ours was the west side, the poor side of the river. My dad grew up in the west side of town. We knew our neighbors, and they knew us. My dad and my friends' dads had all fought in World War II, and my friends and I were all born in the first 5 years after the war. Jack Leach was my friend, and like me and the rest of our friends, life included getting beaten by your father. Elmer Leach owned a boat livery. Unlike the rest of our fathers, he didn't drink. When my dad beat me, he always was drunk. Somehow to me, the beatings I got from my drunken father didn't hurt as much as the beatings the Leach boys got. I knew it was a drunk man beating me, not my dad. Elmer beat his four sons, stone cold sober, out in the lawn for all to see. Mum said Mr. Leach had no shame. She said he was born mean. Mrs. Leach, or Mary to my mum, stood about 5 foot nothing, as Mum said. Mum also said Mrs. Leach could be a silly woman, but I didn't know what Mum meant by this. Mrs. Leach always treated me well. She gave me cookies when she baked, and a nickel sometimes. Both she and Mum had come to Port Credit from Manitoba. That, and the fact that they were neighbors, connected them and made them friends. Most afternoons, Mrs. Leach walked across the front street in her house dress to have tea with Mum. Sometimes Mum gave her a Tony Home permanent. One of these afternoons, I opened the door to Mrs. Leach, and I saw a big dark bruise on the side of her face. She sat down on a kitchen chair, buried her face in her hands, and started to cry. Mum told me to go outside. I heard Mrs. Leach say, "I don't know what to do. I told Elmer I can't have this," just before Mum shut the door in my face. I walked over to the worm box that sat on the side of our yard near Front Street. Mum sold worms to fishermen, 10 cents a dozen, to make extra money. I went out at night, flashlight in hand, to catch dew worms. Sometimes there were two stuck together with slime, so I could grab two with one hand. I placed them in a grass-filled can and transferred them to the earth-filled, 3-foot-high wooden box. I ran toward the worm box, jumped, turned myself around in the air, and plopped down on the box's firm wooden lid. Sticking a piece of juicy fruit gum in my mouth, I wondered what Mrs. Leach couldn't have. About an hour later, I heard the squeak of our screen door. I turned and watched Mum and Mrs. Leach walk out of the door and across the street to Leach's gate. Mum patted, then lightly rubbed Mrs. Leach's back and said, "If that bastard gives you any more trouble, you come right over here to me." Mrs. Leach nodded her head. Mum walked over and joined me on the worm box. I spit my stale gum onto the ground. Mum frowned at me. "Don't spit your gum out like that. Somebody might walk on it and carry it into the house." I jumped down, picked up the dirty ball of chewed gum, and climbed back up on the worm box. Mum handed me a Kleenex. I wrapped the gum in the tissue and slid it in my shirt pocket. "What couldn't Mrs. Leach have?" I asked. "Nothing to concern you, son." "But..." Mum looked at me and put her finger to her lips. We sat in silence, staring at the Leach's house. I wondered how many worms moved below us in the box. That night, Mum and I sat down to supper alone. Dad had not come home from work. This meant he'd stopped at the Legion, and he wouldn't be home until it closed. I helped Mum with the dishes, then we sat at the kitchen table and put together a jigsaw puzzle of the Eiffel Tower. Mum said she would frame it for me when we got it finished. She told me that this tower was in Paris, and that Dad had seen it during the war. At around 7 o'clock, Elmer Leach burst through our front door without knocking. "Florence, you gotta come. Something's wrong with Mary." Mum stood up. "What's wrong?" Elmer said nothing. Mum dropped a jigsaw piece on the table and pushed past Elmer Leach. I trotted after her. Leach's front screen door, like ours, opened into their kitchen. I had been there many times, but never with my mother. Mrs. Leach always visited Mum. Mum never went to visit Mrs. Leach. As Mum entered, she scanned the kitchen, and I followed her gaze. The wallpaper, patterned with green vines snaking up gray brick, had peeled away from the wall in places. Cobwebs hung in the corners of the room and circled the dusty overhead ceiling light, as if they held the light in place. 4 twirls of flypaper, colored black with flies that had gotten stuck to it, hung down around the ceiling light. The stink of garbage rose from the food scraps and dirty dishes that filled the kitchen sink. On the counter beside the sink sat a half-eaten raisin pie. Mrs. Leach must have sprayed flytox recently, because the counter and the top of the pie were peppered with dead flies. After this, we always called raisin pie fly pie. I heard whimpering from somewhere close, but I couldn't tell from where. Mum held onto the kitchen table and knelt down on the dirty floor. She lifted the table's oilcloth cover. I saw blood, a pool of blood under the table. In the blood were two stained white shoes attached to bare legs. Someone was under the table in the red pool. I bent down to get a better look. It was Mrs. Leach. She had her back up tight against the kitchen wall. Her face was turned with her chin resting on her shoulder. The front of her yellow and white print dress was pulled up and bundled in her lap. Bare arms hugged bare legs, holding her knees firmly to her chest. Her underwear seemed to bleed. The back of her dress spread out behind her. Blood had soaked into the white and yellow fabric, making it deep red. "Mary," Mum said softly. Mrs. Leach turned her head toward Mum. The sight of her swollen face made her eye disappear. Red bruises darkened into blue bruises. Mrs. Leach trembled. She put a hand down to steady herself, then lifted it quickly when it came in contact with the blood on the floor. She covered her face with the back of her hand. Blood trickled down her wrist. Mum reached under the table and clasped Mrs. Leach's hand. Mrs. Leach looked bewildered, frightened. "Mary, it's Florence," Mum whispered. Mrs. Leach started to cry. Mum continued in a soft voice, "Come on, Mary, come on out of there." Then Mum turned to me. "Go get some clean towels from home and a sheet." I ran out the front door. Elmer Leach stood on the side of the road, his hands stuck in his pocket, the pockets of his overalls, and shifted his weight from one foot to the other. His hands moved inside his pockets. A roll-your-own hung from his lips. "What the hell's going on in there?" I raced past him toward my house without answering. As I ran back to Leach's house, I inhaled the fresh scent of Mum's towels that I had bundled in a sheet close to my chest. Elmer Leach slid into his car as I passed him. The car door slammed. The engine started as I opened Leach's dusty screen door. Mrs. Leach, still in the bloody pool under the kitchen table, holding my mother's hand, she had stopped crying. I stood and I watched with the screen door propped up against my back. They didn't notice me. Mum had taken the oilcloth that covered the kitchen table and set it on the floor in front of Mrs. Leach. The oilcloth covered most of the blood, except for the patch directly under Mrs. Leach. Mum tried to coax her onto the oilcloth. "It's okay, Mary. Everything will be all right. I want you to try to move yourself onto the oilcloth." Mrs. Leach let go of Mum's hand and lowered her hand onto the oilcloth. She set her other hand beside it and with a grunt turned her body sideways and rolled onto the shiny tablecloth. She laid down on her side, bringing her knees back up to her chest. Her arms again hugged her knees. "I'm going to pull you up from under the table now, Mary, okay?" Mrs. Leach nodded her head. Mum took hold of the oilcloth with both hands and pulled. The oilcloth slid easily on a slick of blood. The bleeding woman on the oilcloth now lay in the middle of the dirty kitchen floor. A wide line of blood traced her journey from under the table. I handed Mum a towel. "Mary, I want you to sit up now so I can clean you off a bit." Mrs. Leach pushed herself up with Mum's help into a sitting position. Mum took the towel and gently rubbed the blood from Mrs. Leach's legs. Straightening each leg, she slowly drew the towel up the back of Mrs. Leach's thigh. "Mary, do you want to tell me what happened?" Mrs. Leach nodded her head several times, then started to talk. "You know, I just couldn't have another baby, Flo. Not with Elmer the way he is. When he found out what I did, he hit me. He hit me hard. I fell down and he kicked me in the stomach. That's when I started to bleed again. After I did it, I only bled for a while. I had stopped bleeding, but then he kicked me. I crawled under the table to hide from him. I pulled my dress up so it wouldn't get dirty." She looked down at her dress and started to cry again. "When he saw the blood, he left." Mrs. Leach looked up from her dress to my mum. "I hate him, Flo. I hate him." All the while, Mum's towel moved gently, cleaning the blood from Mrs. Leach's body. "I'm going to take your shoes off now, Mary." Mrs. Leach said, "I just bought these shoes, Flo, and look at them." They'll clean up fine, Mary, don't worry. Mum threw the stained towel under the table into the thickening blood. She unlaced one shoe, pulled from the heel, then slid the shoe from Mrs. Leach's foot and set it on the floor. The second shoe came off the same way. Mum picked up both shoes and handed them to me. Now, Mary, I'm going to have to get that dress off you. As Mum started to unbutton the dress, Mrs. Leach looked up at me, her body tensed. Mum turned her head. She looked surprised to see me. Who did Mum think had taken Mrs. Leach's shoes from her hand? Give me the rest of the towels, son. Put the sheet over there. She tilted her head toward the kitchen table. And you go to Mrs. Burroughs. No, Mrs. Hibbert's. Tell her to call Dr. Braley and ask him to come here right away. I did as I was told. Mrs. Hibbert looked at the blood-soaked shoes I carried and immediately asked me what was wrong. I told her. She grabbed the phone before I had finished speaking. She said something into the telephone I didn't understand. As she set the receiver back on the cradle, she turned to me and said, "You wait out on my porch till your mother comes to get you." I walked outside and waited on the dark porch. Mrs. Hibbert hurried out of the house. She turned on the porch light. "You stay here. I don't want you leaving this porch until your mother comes. You hear me?" I nodded my head. "Yes, ma'am." She rushed down the porch steps and ran towards Mrs. Leach's house. I sat down on the steps, listening to the crickets for a time, then tried to clean the blood off Mrs. Leach's shoes with spit and the tail of my plaid flannel shirt. Between cricket chirps, a distant siren invaded the night. The siren got louder and louder. I saw a red flashing light come up Front Street. I ran into the street to watch. A big white ambulance stopped out in front of Leach's house. I saw my mother come out and I ran to her. She put her arms around me and backed me away from the ambulance. Leach's front door stood open and two men in white suits lifted Mrs. Leach onto a kind of hammock. They carried her out of the house and into the back of the ambulance. "Mrs. Hibbert's gone to get your father from the Legion. I'm going with Mary. I want you to go back to Mrs. Hibbert's now and wait for your father." "I want to go with you." "I know, sweetheart, but you just can't." Mum kissed me. One of the men in the white suits helped her into the back of the ambulance, climbed in after her, and pulled the door shut. As the ambulance drove away, I saw Mrs. Hibbert walking toward me up Front Street. "Your dad is too drunk to look after you tonight. You're coming to stay at my house." Mrs. Hibbert's husband had been killed in the war. She gave out good stuff on Halloween. I liked her, but I didn't want to stay the night with her. "Can you come to my house and just wait till my dad comes home?" "He's in no condition to look after you. You're coming to my house for the night." "But there's no buts about it, young man." Mrs. Leach's white shoes sat where I had left them on Mrs. Hibbert's porch. I picked them up and carried them inside. Hibbert's house was as small as ours, and Mrs. Hibbert put me in her room. She slept on the couch. The next morning, before breakfast, Mum came to get me. Mum told Mrs. Hibbert that everything turned out well and that Mrs. Leach was going to be fine, but that she had lost the child. I asked which of the Leach boys got lost. Mum shushed me and told me to thank Mrs. Hibbert. I did. Then Mum and I walked home. "What's that you have in the bag, son?" "Mrs. Leach's shoes." "Let me have a look." I opened a paper bag and Mum lifted one of the white shoes out of it. She turned the shoe over in her hands and said, "I think we can clean these up good as new." After breakfast, Mum took me to Johnson's store. They had everything at Johnson's. Mum bought a new kind of shoe polish. It had a glass jar, wide at the bottom and narrow at the top, and when you twisted the lid off, a wire attached to the lid ended in a ball of cloth soaked in white shoe polish. Mum bought it and put it in the bag with Mrs. Leach's shoes. When we got home, Mum showed me how to use the new shoe polish. She dipped the ball of cloth into the liquid polish a few times and dragged a polish-filled ball around the shoe, starting at the soles and working in straight lines around the shoe until she had reached the top. Mum let me do the second shoe. I dipped the ball into the jar of polish, then carefully painted the blood-stained shoe white. Mum told me when Mrs. Leach got out of the hospital, I could give her back her shoes. Mum said that it would make Mrs. Leach happy.
That was Bob Osborne reading his story, Across the Street. This concludes Life Rattle number 1232. Watch for updates on the Life Rattle website with more information on the collection Rub Salt, which will be available before the new year. Arnie Ackman recorded Bob Osborne reading his stories. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more stories.